wanted to thank you very much for our informal time together to talk and unwind and let down our hair and just to be brothers with many struggles and much conflict. And please come and show up and quiet our fears and our anxieties and just come and be real to us in the name of Jesus. Okay, chapter 4. Is that right? 4, 5, and 6?
Yeah.
Remember that the first part of Proverbs is a father's advice to a son. And this father is starting to talk to his son when the son is just a toddler and he is there and the mother is there also. This is very much unlike the families we grew up in. But God is our father and God is also our mother. And God is our friend and our companion. So the book of Proverbs makes good sense if we think of it in that light. Not thinking about your parents and their failures. But so anyway, chapter 4 is continuing advice from the father to the boy. From God our Father to us sons. Hear, my children, the instruction of a father and give attention to no understanding. I give you good doctrine. Do not forsake my law. When I was my father's son, tender and the only one in the sight of my mother, he also taught me and said to me, let your heart retain my words, keep my commands, and live. In other words, this father is remembering that he had a good father. Remember that his father loved him and helped him. And so he is a role model for this kid growing up, this son. Now that's so foreign to us in our culture. I don't remember my grandfathers very well, and I certainly don't have a good relationship with my father, now long dead. But if I translate this into God is my father, then I can get sense out of this. Now the father says in verse 5, get wisdom, get understanding, do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth.
Do not chapter 4?
Chapter 4, verse
5. No.
So the father says, get wisdom. We've met wisdom already. Wisdom is like having a good godly mother or a good godly wife or a sister or a friend. But wisdom is an attribute of Jesus himself. Jesus is wise. Jesus is able to be a mother and a father to us, and a brother and a mentor and a lover. All those things Jesus is capable of being for us. So the father says here, listen to your mother or listen to your grandmother or listen to godly women in your community.
I'm in Proverbs 4, my verse 5 says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own.
Chapter 4, verse...
No, that's chapter 3.
You're,
Oh, really? It's saying chapter 4
or not? This is chapter 4, verse 5. Get wisdom, get understanding, do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her, and she will preserve you. Love her, and she will keep you. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom, and in all your getting, get understanding. Exalt her, and she will promote you. She will bring you honor when you embrace her. She will place on your head an ornament of grace, a crown of glory she will deliver to you. We've already talked about good women, good mothers, good girlfriends, and we also talked about bad mothers, bad girlfriends, witches, prostitutes, deceptive women who are out to use us and destroy us. And it's very hard for us to... Men are not very discerning about this because we can easily get hooked up with women that drag us down and not edify. It's very rare to have a woman in your life who's godly. They're just very scarce in our culture. And so we can find the wisdom of God in Jesus. It's there. Now, the next thing the father says to his son is in verse 10. Hear, my son, and receive my sayings. The years of your life will be many. Look, if you pay attention to me, you can have a long and fruitful life and be very productive. This is just good, wise advice from an experienced dad, or actually from Jesus. I have taught you in the way of wisdom. I've led you in the right paths. When you walk, your steps will not be hindered. When you run, you will not stumble. Take hold, firm hold of instruction. Do not let go. Keep her. She is your life. In other words, read the Bible, hang out with other Christians, stay away from destructive friends and alliances, and you'll be just fine. And you're with a band of fellow pilgrims, a band of other men and women who are learning and growing along with you. So settle in and be part of your community. And pay attention to the good people in your life and stay away from the people that are destructive. So that's the idea. Do not enter the path of the wicked. Do not walk in the way of evil. Avoid it. Do not travel on it. Turn away from it and pass on. For they do not sleep unless they have done evil, and their sleep is taken away unless they make someone fall. They eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. But the path of the just, the righteous, is like the shining sun that shines ever brighter until the perfect day. The way of the wicked is like darkness. They do not know what makes them stumble. My son, give attention to my words. Incline your ear to my sayings. Do not let them depart from your eyes. Keep them in the midst of your heart, for they are life to those who find them, health to all their flesh. Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of the heart spring the issues of life. That's a very famous memory verse. Keep your heart with all diligence. Watch your motives. Watch your emotions. Watch who you're hanging out with. Watch for those influences that affect you emotionally, drag you down. Put away from you a deceitful mouth. Put perverse lips from you. Let your eyes look straight ahead and your eyelids look right before you. Ponder the path of your feet and let all your ways be established. Do not turn to the right or the left. Remove your feet from evil. So that's just about staying close to Jesus. It's about trusting him and obeying him and shutting out of your life all distractions that draw you away from him, because intimate walking with Jesus is number one. That's the whole thing we have to be busy doing, and we cannot let ourselves be distracted or drawn away by anything that would hinder our intimacy with Jesus. Chapter 5. My son, pay attention to my wisdom. Lend your ear to my understanding, that you may preserve discretion, that your lips may keep knowledge. Now, he's going to talk about the woman who is dangerous in your life. A girlfriend, a bad mom, an acquaintance that you maybe care about, but she drags you down. And so he talks about an immoral woman dripping, the lips of an immoral woman drip honey, and her mouth is smoother than oil. So this is a slick, a beautiful, enchanting woman that's attractive, that you easily ally yourself with, thinking that you can help. And it's a relationship that's not going to be fruitful for you or for her. In the end, she's bitter as wormwood. The word wormwood, by the way, is in Greek, is the word Chernobyl. It's where you get radioactive fallout. In the end, she's bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps lay hold of hell. Lest you ponder her path of life, her ways are unstable. You do not know them. There is an influence in the world that is seductive and enchanting and charming and attractive and appealing to fun and happiness and delight and enjoyment for today, and come over to my house and let's party. or come on into my tent, or let's hang out together, let's go have lunch together. That may or may not be a good idea. So that's what the Father's telling the Son here. Therefore, hear me now, my children. Do not depart from the words of my mouth. Remove your way from her. Do not go near the door of her house, lest you give your honor to others and your years to the cruel one. Satan's the god of this world. He's a liar and a murderer and a deceiver, and he would love to wipe us out. Don't give your honor to others, your years to the cruel one, lest aliens be filled with your wealth, your labors go to the house of a foreigner, and you mourn at last when your flesh and your body are consumed. And you say, how I have hated instruction, and my heart despised reproof. I've not obeyed the voice of my teachers, nor inclined my ear to those who instructed me. I was on the verge of total ruin in the midst of the congregation and assembly. So this is the story of all kinds of people. Young people who started out really well in life, and God gave them all kinds of opportunities, and they may be happily married, maybe a good job, maybe a good position, and they lost it all, and they ended up bankrupt living at the brother's house, or homeless, or sometimes it's very difficult to tell how people end up homeless or broke, but usually the devil has eroded away their trust and captured them and systematically destroyed them. And that's what the devil wants to do with us. Drink water from your own cistern and running water from your own well. Should your fountains be dispersed abroad, streams of water in the street? Let them be only your own and not for strangers with you, lest your fountain be blessed, and rejoice with the wife of your youth as a loving deer and a graceful doe. Let her breast satisfy you at all times. Always be enraptured with her love. Why should you, my son, be enraptured by an immoral woman and be embraced on the arms of a seductress? The ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he ponders all his paths. His own iniquities entrap the wicked man, and he's caught in the cords of his sin. He shall die for lack of instruction, and in the greatness of his folly he shall go astray. So this is the father talking to a grown-up son, saying, son, I want the very best for you. I've tried to help you, but you're on your own now. And if you would just remember all the things you learned here and all the things that you found out in the Bible and all the things that were offered to you, you'll be fine in life. And you're not going to get seduced and destroyed and bankrupt. And the father knows perfectly well that this son's likely to be a prodigal son, and likely to fail, but he doesn't want that for his son. So this is very much the story of our lives. Chapter 6. My son, if you become surety for your friend, if you have shaken hands in pledge for a stranger, you are snared by the words of your own mouth. You're taken by the words of your mouth. In other words, don't get yourself in an entangled alliance, in debt, in an obligation to somebody that you don't know and you don't trust. Because that's don't listen to bad advice, because there's a hook in it, and that hook is out to destroy you. So do this, my son, and deliver yourself. You have come into the hand of your friend. Go and humble yourself, plead with your friend. Give no sleep to your eyes, nor slumber to your eyelids. Deliver yourself like a gazelle from the hand of the hunter, and like a bird from the hand of the fowler. So he's saying, this father is saying to his son, son, some of your friends are not working in your own best interest. They are actually drawing you away from all the things you know to be true, and they are leading you down a rose path to destruction. So be careful who you hang out with and who you listen to and who you trust. And so this is a loving father talking to us who have free will and free choice. That's God speaking to us, because we live in a very dangerous world and it's full of evil. And this father wants the son to walk closely to Jesus. And he's pleading with his son here to keep an eye on Jesus all the time. He talks about the gazelle or the bird. Gazelles are deer that leap and prance on the hills, and they're free. And of course, birds fly wherever they want. And so we trap gazelles and we trap birds in the same way that the devil traps us when we ought to be free spirits. Now, he says, get a job. Howard's right, you guys got to get a job. And this is very much in the whole Bible, is working, supporting yourself, staying busy is an absolutely essential part of being a Christian. Adam, before the fall of man, had to tend a garden. He was assigned to take care of the garden and to cultivate it and till it and prune the roses and make sure everything was watered and get the caterpillars off and the parasites. And that's a lot of hard work. And you think about all the farmers who labor long, hard hours in the field and plowing and sowing and reaping. And all the carpenters and laborers who, and all the chain gangs that work on the railroad. Think of all the hard work that has characterized the human race ever since the beginning. And that's legitimate work. So he says, go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. So he says, pay attention to those ants over there on that ant bed. They're all so industrious. They're all working for the good of the community. They are single-minded, and you can disturb the ant's nest and they'll put it all back together again. And they are going to support the nest and raise the young independent of any outside influence. So go study the ant's nest. They have no captain, no overseer, nor ruler. So nobody's in charge of an anthill. Ants all just communicate by pheromones, by chemical sensors, and by touch. And they all know what to do. They know how to forage and bring in food and clean the nest out. And they're all running on with a collective mind. Because the ant provides her supplies in the summer, gathers her food in the harvest. How long will you slumber, O sluggard? When will you rise from your sleep? So he's talking about the lazy, good-for-nothing kid that wants to sleep all day, won't get a job, gives Howard nightmares, will not go get a job, and is just living off the fat of the land and taking advantage of the community he's part of. So, how long are you going to sleep, O sluggard? When will you rise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall your poverty come on you like a robber and your need like an armed man. If you don't get a job and learn how to work and how to be responsible, you have no future in this world. You're going to end up homeless and you won't have, it'll be too late in life for you to learn a job skill or to learn a trade. You're going to just be a candidate for the dumpster. A worthless person, a wicked man, walks with perverse mouth. So there are crooks and gangsters out there who are parasites on the society. He winks with his eyes, he shuffles his feet, he points with his fingers. Perversity is in his heart. He devises evil continually. He sows discord. Therefore, his calamity shall come suddenly. Suddenly he shall be broken without remedy. There are criminals. There are people who won't work, who are parasites and live off of others. And God does not look kindly on those leeches who prey on vulnerable young men who simply need to get a job and settle down and work. Now, I like verse 16, especially because this is the only place in the Bible that tells you what God hates. God hates some things, and here's the list. These six things the Lord hates. Yes, seven are an abomination to him. A proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that are swift to run to evil, a false witness who speaks lies, and one who sows discord among brothers. That's not the kind of list that I would make if I was writing this list of the things that I hate. But God here is interested in the integrity of the community and the integrity of our relationships, and he hates discord and headbutting and competition among his children, and we're all very different. So God does not like a proud look. That would be an arrogant, self-sufficient, self-righteous attitude of, I'm okay, you're not okay. I'm better than you, I know more than you. I'm older and wiser than you kids. See, that's a proud look. A lying tongue would be the person who's not honest, who won't come clean, who lies or manipulates. A heart that devises wicked plans. That would be the schemer, the manipulator, the conniver. Feet that are swift to shed blood, running to evil. That would be the guy who pretends to be moral and righteous, but he's sleeping around and he's living a double life and he's not honest and not accountable to anybody. A false witness who speaks lies. One who sows discord among brothers. Man, that's a real indictment, because we can easily spread dissension and discord among our fellow Christians. It's very, very easy to do. And notice here how the Lord is guarding the integrity of every individual, but he's guarding the whole community. And we have to cooperate with him because we're all very different, and we're all struggling, and we're all recovering from something. Now, it comes further in that the father talks to his son. My son, keep your father's command. Do not forsake the law of your mother. Bind them continually upon your heart. Tie them around your neck. Pay attention. When you roam, they will lead you. When you sleep, they will keep you. When you awake, they will speak with you. In other words, if you remember the good teachings of your pastors and teachers, or ideally your mom and your dad, if those teachings come to mind when you're tempted, you'll be fine. And so pay close attention to what you've learned from the Bible, what you learned from your fellow Christians, and you will be protected. The commandment is a lamp, and the law is light. Reproofs of instruction are the way of life. So, yes, we need to be corrected and disciplined, and we need to be spoken to by people that are older and wiser than we are, ideally parents, but not in today's world. Pay attention to keep you from the evil woman, from the flattering tongue of a seductress. Don't lust after her beauty in your heart, nor let her allure you with her eyelids. So this is the prostitute, but it's also the loose woman. It's the woman who does not have any moral roots and stamina. The woman who's easily swayed by emotions and by her needs, and would love to have somebody she could drain the life out of. By means of a harlot, a man is reduced to a crust of bread. An adulteress will prey upon his precious life. Now, this is not necessarily literal adultery. It's spiritual adultery. It's all the things that draw us away from an intimate relationship with Jesus that we have to resist and fight. And God doesn't want our performance if it's empty and legalistic and self-righteous. He wants our hearts, our emotions. And an adulteress would be any influence in our lives that drawing us away from an intimate relationship with Jesus. Can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Can one walk on coals, hot coals, and his feet not be seared? So is he who goes into his neighbor's wife. Whoever touches her shall not be innocent. A lot of marriages fail because the man gets restless and dissatisfied with his wife, and he goes next door and finds a sympathetic woman next door who listens to him and pampers him and draws him away from his wife. And good heavens, marriages fail all the time because of this other woman. Well, this other woman is not paying attention to her husband, or she's not accountable to anybody, so she is destroying herself but destroying anybody else she can draw into her orbit. People do not despise a thief if he steals to satisfy himself when he's starving. So you can excuse the guy that stole from you if he's really, really hungry and desperate. You can excuse that. You don't despise the person. Yet when he is found, he must restore sevenfold. He may have to give up all the substance of his house. So when you catch the thief, you want him to pay restitution. You want him to pay back what he's taken and maybe more, and to restore what he stole. And that's a principle of life, that everybody has got a sovereign boundaries around them, and nobody likes to be ripped off or taken advantage of or used or stolen from. We always feel diminished when that happens, and we're very vulnerable because we trust other people, and you can't trust everybody. And so there is accountability as part of being a Christian. People do not despise a thief if he steals to satisfy himself when he's starving. Yet when he's found, he must restore sevenfold. He may have to give up all the substance of his house. Pay what you owe. Whoever commits adultery with a woman lacks understanding. He does so, destroys his own soul. Wounds and dishonor he will get. His reproach will not be wiped away. Jealousy is a husband's fury, therefore he will not spare it in the day of vengeance. He will accept no recompense, nor will he be appeased, though you give him many gifts. So, this is the sad story of the failure of many, many marriages. Oftentimes a young man and one young woman get married without hardly knowing the other person and not knowing what they're in for, and marriage is no bed of roses. It's a combat zone, and the man and the woman need to be paying attention to Jesus if the relationship's going to work. All you got to do is have the man be attracted away by another woman or drawn away by his job or his hobbies, so that he stops being the husband that he should be, and he stops leading his wife, and he stops helping her. Anyway, that's chapters 4, 5, and 6 in a nutshell. I went through those lightning fast. Any questions? Comments? Dave probably has some comments. Not yet. Well, this speaks volumes to me. But we've got 15 minutes, so how could we pray? There's an old way to study Proverbs.
It says, rejoice with the wife of your youth, and that's true. I mean,